Brought to you by Face to Face Games.
The first rule of Fight Club is...
Hey, you can't be afraid of change, right?
Nope. Nice. Where is my cane? So if I go like this.
I have super bars.
Yeah, you got group bars. I'm trying to get my bars up a bit. Let me see. Hello.
Do you even lift bars, bro?
Do I even lift bars, bro? What? All right, my bars are pretty dope. They're solid, but they're not as spiky as your balls. That's so bad. I don't even know. bars, balls, whatever.
Talk about being a spike.
I know, right? All right, everybody, welcome in. Much love, as Travis would say, to another exciting episode of Hype Club. As always, I am Maddie Studios.
Tony Awesome Sauce with kind of an awesomer voice.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long weekend.
It was long. It was fun. GP Toronto was pretty amazing. We got to roller skate. That was insane.
Oh, man.
In the GP.
I've done so much roller skating.
Oh, man.
Honestly, probably one of the best things that's like coming to my life. Maddie, first you hooked me up with a bike. I biked until my ass was sore, literally. And then you got me blades, and I'm going to put in, like, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day on these things. I got a massive blister already, but that's because it's only day two, but that'll turn into a callus, and then my feet will be tough.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe the face of people where we just whipped through, like, why don't you stop? But I just whipped through on my blades right through the GP. People are playing, and I'm just, like, coasting by like a vampire, like, silently. Just
Maddie
like,
Valdarin.
Oh, man. Yeah, GP was awesome, man.
Frontier GP was event dope. Was, it was great.
Amazing. That was fun.
Yeah, North American Frontier Championship won by, I have the name somewhere. I'm such a troll. Matthew is the winner. He's from Rochester. I don't have his last name. Lucas Worrell came in second, local from the shop. Some pictures of him staring at the first place trophy holding his are just like absolutely classic. those are fantastic. And, I'm literally the worst. I was not prepared for this at all, as you can hear by my voice and my lack of attention to detail. But we'll definitely do a podcast on mtgfrontier.com and an article with all the deck lists and shout out to the winners, and maybe we can get them on that cast here. But this is the club. We got other things to talk about today.
We do. The one thing I did want to talk about, because I won't be on the MTG Frontier podcast.
Yeah, too many mats there already.
It's just oversaturated with mats. Was my experience in the Frontier Challenge, because I committed the cardinal sin, I believe, which is if you have a deck and you do well with it, you shouldn't just put that deck to the side and build a brand new deck the day before you enter a tournament. That's what I did, and I decided to make all fun card choices, because who doesn't want to play with the Scarab God, and who doesn't want to play Nicol Bolas?
And Champion of Wits.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was actually a good call.
Which you beat me to death with.
Yeah.
But only one game. I beat you in the match. Now we're tied.
Yeah. Oh, I got absolutely destroyed. I went 0 for everything. I didn't win a single game. It was horrible.
No, you beat me. You crushed me with that champion.
Sorry, I didn't win a single match. I got decimated. I can't remember his name, but he was playing the mill deck. And my deck likes to draw cards. So every time I drew a card, I was milling myself. And I couldn't do anything. It was hilarious. I'm sitting there. I have Scarab God. I've got the dragon out. And I'm like, 2-turn kill. And I got him. And I'm like, I can't actually do anything. Like, if I cast a card, it's going to put a card in the graveyard. And that will trigger. And I'm sitting there. And I've got like 4 cards in the graveyard. And I'm like, I just got to get one attack. One more attack. And he got me on upkeep to mill myself. I'm like, oh, foul.
Crushed.
Oh, my God. Yeah, crushed. But you know what? It was fun. It was so much fun. I've learned a lot about Grixis. Mana base is... that mana base is not ready for prime time. That is... Or there's a lot of things going on there. I probably put too many one-ups. Got to find a better strategy. Can't dirtle forever. But the one thing I realized is if you don't have pressure, you can have all the control magic in the world. You can have all the answers in the world. You're just going to die. Because every other deck is pumping out threat after threat after threat after pressure. And you just can't, you can't kill everything. Like, you know, one Siege Rhino gets through and then I'm like, oh man, now I'm screwed.
So, yeah, and that's the thing that is sort of... There's no deck that keeps other decks in check. It's an archetype, you know? Like, you will be playing against aggressive decks, and people do enjoy mono red, and it's a very good strategy. So if you're not prepared to, like, deal with 4 or 6 power on turn 2 or 3, then be prepared for the L.
Yeah, that and Shaheely. I found, like, I played 3 Shaheely opponents, so I was like, oh my god. At least I knew what I was doing. Like, I'm very familiar with how that works. So,
yeah, because you chose not to play it.
Yeah, like a fool. But I had all the good... I had the right sideboard cards. So at least I'll give myself a sideboard experience. I knew what to board in and where. It just... My main deck was a disaster. I needed way more focus. I think of that champion, the blue one...
Champion of Wits.
Champion of Wits. I think I would just go up to like 3 of those. And
that's Supreme, so many Champion of Wits, though.
I just need something on the ground to block. I found like if
yeah, that's
just
fair.
Had...
That's fair. It is like a Faithless Looting on a stick, and then some.
And it's fueling. Like, I think if I was going to use that card again, I'd modify the deck to be more like put those down early, block a bunch of stuff, maybe delve more, maybe go up to like 3 dig through times, and maybe a Tasiger, maybe a fish. You know, like just so that I'm like blocking a bunch of stuff early, trying to put some bigger pressure on the board, and then. I don't know what the win con could be. Nicol Bolas feels like so far away. You know, like they're turn 3 Shaheely and you're like, I'm never getting Nicol Bolas. Like, I gotta fight through this.
I hate to say
now.
It told you so, but it told us so.
It was fun though. I held Nicol Bolas in my hand. Scarab God though was amazing. I had that card out twice and it was just, people were like, oh boy. Because it's insane. It's just like, okay, well, untap, okay, I'm allowed to go, okay, trigger Scarab God, I'll just bring back some crazy Gear Hulk, something else, like, wow, it was awesome, that card's great. Yeah. I think we could build, lower the curve, get it down at a 7 range, get it down in around the 5s, and I think the deck would be, it'd close a lot faster.
Over the weekend, I've noticed that people are really into the gods, especially for Standard 2, like,
Scarab God.
It's like, yes, Scarab God. Like
Locust God.
Locust God is just like the best thing you can open in draft. And
Scorpion
speaking
God, I don't know.
Yeah, well, speaking of opening the Locust God in draft, I want to shout out to Tamer Ashad, who's a guy local from Toronto, plays at our store, who made top 8 of his first, not his first GP, but his first GP top 8, which put him on the Pro Tour, and that's a really, really big deal for him and his circle.
Nice
he runs
job.
With Dan Fournier and Pauline and... and like Omar Belden and a bunch of the local PT grinders here. So he really, really works hard at limited and getting to the next level. And he super, super earned that top 8. So huge shout out to Tamer. But I don't want to take away from that. I just have to say that the winner of the entire GP, Robert Anderson, is a face-to-face crew member. I met Rob last year when we went to a workouting together. We went to like a distributor open house, and we hit it off. We had a great time. We were chatting up until the tournament, and he took down the whole thing. And I'm not going to lie, I was tearing down the booth when it got announced, and everyone who was working just kind of freaked out. You know, Rob, like, his goal is always to get on the Pro Tour, and he gets close. I see his statuses of, like, lost in the top 8 of the PTQ, you know, lost my first round of the RPTQ, like, grind, 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 grind. And not only did he make it to the PT by making top 8, but he took down the whole thing. He's got the hardware, and I gave him the suggestion of eating cereal out of it, and Rob eats a lot of cereal, so,
if you're
friends with him on Facebook, or maybe me on Twitter, I'll post the picture of Rob eating cereal out of his GP trophy. So huge shout out to Robert Anderson for taking on the tournament. It's really awesome to see locals, you know, win.
Oh, yeah.
He's from Montreal, but he's a local in my heart. So shout out Rob Anderson. That's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, anyone, you know, it just proves that the scene we're in is, like, pretty high up there in terms of, like, competitiveness, weekly, week out. Like, there's a lot of people that do really well from the whole Toronto Montreal area, so
yeah,
I think that's great. But let's get out of the GP news, because that was fun. But man, did we get some other announcements that just snuck in there out of nowhere.
Dead cat on the table, man. Like, Wizards is becoming pros. They fire Helene, and then whoever is replaced doing these media announcements is, like, basically the Sean Spicer of Wizards, also who got fired.
That's actually pretty accurate. Let's talk about it. So to give a bit of history, the last, I would say, 18 months, Wizards got more and more upset. I don't think it was upset. I think what they did is they sat down, they said, look, we're going to put all our efforts for 12 months, for four fiscal quarters, into standard to see if that makes a difference. Because I think what I'm noticing the trend at Wizards does is they say, for a year we're doing this, and then they analyze and look at the data, and if they don't like the data, they just change it. But they just change the next thing on the list. They don't. I feel like there's a bit of disconnect. But so we had this big standard run where they focused everything on standard. And my personal belief is they looked at the numbers and said, ooh, not only did we focus it on standard.
Not only did they focus everything on standard, but they also focused all their bans on standard.
Yes, they did. But not only that, I think a couple of factors all weighed in on this. And that was the pros broke standard. I think R&D did a crappy job.
Wizards broke standard.
Which made it easier to break, yeah. And then I think they realized that, oh my goodness, casual people, which we're trying to sell cards to, don't care one way or the other about a Pro Tour. They don't watch that, and then aren't going to watch it. And then you alienated all the people that are the older crowd. We're here that are like continually here every year. And we're like, what's going on? And now Wizards is like, okay, guys, we need a breather. We have to take some focus off R&D. And we're going to give you your Modern Pro Tour back. What? So I'm just flabbergasted that a year ago, hearing Aaron Forsythe
got there.
Speak about it. Yeah, knocked it out. He was very adamant that it's standard, Modern sucks. You can't have focus on it. So I'm now very curious that all of a sudden they're just like, yeah, it's back on the table. Here you go. So I like that. I've always called for, and I know it's been our motto, balance, man. We want to see a balance of everything. I think there should be four different Pro Tours every year. I think it should be as varied as possible so that no one format bears that magnifying glass intensity of what the pros can break at time after time after time. I think one Pro Tour, okay, and then we're back to standard, or we're back to Team Trios now. I mean,
well, Team Trios still like includes standard, right? So that's another way to sneak in like an extra standard Pro Tour, but maybe it's that's definitely more of a viable option moving forward to one block systems, right? Because it's really hard to showcase the evolution of your set and what you're trying to accomplish when it takes 6 months to put all the cards into play.
Yeah.
And now that that's not the case, we see that very clearly with the organized play schedule coming out next year. So if you haven't checked it out, my favorite part of it is that Toronto gets two GPs, one being Modern, one being Team Trios. So exactly like you're saying, this is what people in this region want, and they're giving it to us. So we want to, at home, we want to watch Pro Tours that are interesting, that have stories to them, that have like an epic build, not just, okay, well, these pros broke it and that's what's going to happen. And that's sort of what I expect of this Pro Tour coming up. And, you know, I've heard Daniel Forney say a couple times, he's in Kyoto now, but I've heard him say, you know, I think we broke it. I think we broke it because that's the point. And I'm excited to watch to see if they did break it, but I want to see like a tale. I want to see the journey of this GP to this team GP to a Pro Tour to the next GP to the next team GP to the next Pro Tour. You know, I want the evolution of players on the screen in front of me, and then I want them to touch base in my hometown so then I can go and see them and take part.
100%. I think something else, like it's kind of interesting to look at philosophy. And that's kind of like the way when you need to delve deep. I know JR would probably get it. Like when you're analyzing stocks and markets and bonds and that, you need to look at like the philosophy of a company to understand where it's going. And if you look at like the core philosophy of how they operate, it's the same thing with their masterpieces. They were like, well, we want to juice the players. Well, give them masterpieces. Well, how many do we give them? 10? Nah, give them 50.
All of them.
And they'll give them 50 and give them 50 every set until they choke. And it was the same thing with standards. Like, well, let's give them standard. Well, how much standard?
All the standard.
All the time. Like, you know, so I feel like, I hope. I mean, we have a new president, so whatever. I hope that there's a bit of a learning curve now that they're like, hey, you can't just RAM. And I know the accountants love it. The Bobs love sitting there being like, hey, put all the focus on one thing, and we have very clear numbers that it worked. But if you put a little bit everywhere, it's very statistically hard to track it all and to know which one did 1% better than the other, so we know where to put our money. But I think they need to relax on that a bit and diversify, you know, broaden the scope of what they're doing so that, I mean, they constantly tell us that Magic is for everyone and everyone plays Magic different, yet the product they offer, they want to be singular. So it's the same thing with the F&M changes. We have to get to a point where we're offering multiple things to multiple types of personalities. And that same thing goes with the promotional tours. So,
well, the thing is, they don't have one product to offer. Now that I've seen a product mm-hmm. like the Nicol Bolas Archenemy, because that's the closest thing aside from the Magic board game that they've made to a board game. You know,
yeah,
here's
like
a box that you can play. Yeah. You know, whatever the exponent of 4 times 4 is, like played around,
sure.
And then. Then you can modify it with the other product that they offer. But I want to see stuff like that every year, twice a year, 3 times a year. I want to see more like Commander anthologies. I want to see like built-in box sets that are just going to like totally engage a new player versus giving them a taste of something that they're not going to experience. For example, you buy one Commander deck. And then you play it and you're like, wow, this is really cool. And then you go to a Commander night and you get crushed by people who are like mono blue Teferi. That's not like really the way it is, but when you give people cards like Gideon Jura and Nicol Bolas and like actual playable good cards in a box where they can like learn and like try new things and then take that next step. Like I had a guy come into the store and he's like, hey, I'm going to the cottage with some friends who used to play Magic. They don't know I'm doing this. What should I get? And it was not close to the Nicol Bolas Archenemy set. And he 100%. Came back after 2 weeks and he's like, we're still playing it. And I've never seen a product from Wizards like that before. And those are the type of things I want to see for the new players. But you can't just ram one product down everyone's throat and expect everyone to discover their own journey. You really need to, like, help them.
Yeah, I think I've been reading Reddit. I know. Everyone's like, why? And I'm like, sometimes it's good content, but you got to skim it. I was reading through and people were talking about the F&M changes and really a couple of very interesting viewpoints came to light, which was Wizards is trying to separate because they believe that there's like you said, there's people that come in and say, I just want a casual experience, and there's other people that are saying, you know, I want a competitive experience. And I think what one or two people started to put together, and it's the same kind of like thought process I have, which is, well, you aren't. It's this they're the same person at different points in the journey. So that when you enter, it's like anything. When I first show up, you should get smashed. You should get obliterated because you don't know what you're doing. Magic is a hobby that rewards effort put in, just like anything. Like, you can't walk into, jump on a roller rink and, you know, never skated before and expect to score a goal. So I think what they need to do is there has to be more of a helping process with the newer players. Like, you should focus on like saying, hey, how you doing? How can we get you to the next stage? Like, clearly outline how you proceed to a player who can play at a more higher level if you want to. And the problem with Magic is no one's ever laid that out. No one has ever put the branches of the tree down to say, like, hey, at this fork in the road, do you want to go to the left or do you want to go to the right? Do you want to go more casual or do you want to go more competitive? And then notch down the road, go to that different product or go to that different service or event. It was always just go to F&M. And then it's up to the store to recognize what their local player base is like and adjust from there. And in my opinion, I think Wizards shouldn't... I mean, maybe they should just leave that more to the store. I wanted to get your point on this. Like, how much interference do you want Wizards to be designing specific roads? Or do you want to say, look, we have a very unique meta here. Like, you know, I have Commander players and I have Modern players. I don't have Drafters or, you know, whatever you believe your store makeup is. Stop forcing the wrong thing down my throat. You know, like, do you think stores should just have more ability to tailor make their environments to the player and then just call on Wizards for tools? Or do you want Wizards to just say, here's the map, follow it?
I want Wizards to literally call me and say, no, but they've done it before. They've actually done it before. I want them to just call me and say, hey, we see your metrics. You're a number. You're a store that's in the 100th percentile in every single thing except standard, but no one's in the 100th percentile for standard, so that's not really a mark against you. But, like, that being perfect at everything doesn't give them any information, right?
True.
So what I want them to look at is how many people come and play Thursday Night Modern on a weekly basis, because they have that information. We upload the events. The information's there. I want them to see what the information they don't have is, why do they come? What does our prize structure look like? Who is our judges? How many levels of judges do we have on staff? Who are those judges? Do they work those events? Like, they look at that very carefully when it comes to Grand Prix and even closer at the Pro Tour. There's only certain people that are even allowed to judge or head judge Grand Prix and Pro Tours, and they have like a whole judge manager, John Good, who like hand picks people for Grand Prix to be in certain positions, and John takes the risk of, yeah, I believe in this person, but I don't feel like they get that information at the local level, and we at Toronto are so blessed to have people like Graham Schofield, Mike Hill, Kelly Ackerman, on as like all very experienced level twos and highly dedicated customer service representatives, as well as judges. And I mean, Mike Geisels, who's a newly minted L2 who has been working beyond his station for a very long time, is I am ecstatic to have him as a part of, I would like to say, as a part of our judge team, even though he's from London and a couple hours away. But, you know, he had judged the North American Frontier Championship on purpose. He was specifically, he's amazing. He was specifically issued to do that. He judged for us in Frontier in Vegas because he's interested in the format and took the initiative to put himself there. He'll be head judging our Toronto Opens. Like, this guy's amazing. And these are the people that the Toronto locals get to learn from. So now we have Judge Sharon, Caitlin, who's learning from these unbelievably amazing judges. And Wizards knows none of it, right? They know that these people exist, but they don't know what it's like on a weekly basis. They don't really know what our Sunday showdowns look like and to the level we expect the customer service as well as tournament integrity. So maybe they should just like send somebody to come by and take a look at these stores that are all specifically in the 100th percentile and like have a conversation with people for real. You know, it could be Skype, it could be a phone call, but if someone from Wizards came and hung out in our store for a Sunday showdown, they would get a true sense of what a store, I keep saying it because I'm kind of proud of it, of a store who's in the 100th percentile of all their metrics that they offer truly means and what that actually represents to the brand and to the game of Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like data singularity, which is something I run into all the time, which is you get a set of data, but if you didn't understand how the data got there and what it is, you're going to totally misinterpret it. So like, you're right. It does take a bit of broadening to go in and understand where the data come from. Who made the data? Why did they make the data? Why did they structure it like this?
And why do we care?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, the why we care is pretty obvious, but to someone who needs to get into that level, you know, get that deep dive into it, I think that's great. I think more bringing it back to the modern GP and where we're going, I think definitely we are going to have the next year be very focused not on standard. And I think it's, one, because they need to take pressure off R&D. Two, I think sales are suffering in the standard environment, and their immediate reaction is going to be like, we need to focus sales elsewhere while we shore up standard. And then I think, two, is that I think the data showed that all standard all the time is just not what anyone really wants. And I think this is kind of the future of like, okay, we're going to broaden it a bit. Now, there's one caveat to this whole thing, and that is I don't think we're going to get a modern GP next year. I mean, Pro Tour. I think this is a one-time thing they're going to test. Aaron Forsythe already said, he's like, look, I'm not committing to anything here. He's like, let's take this first one. So, you know, maybe it's going to smash records. Maybe we'll have 50,000 viewers. Who knows? I hope it does. But also then you've got this weird double-edged sword of, well, we can put modern every year. Or do we want to put modern? Like, is that the right decision for the format? I don't know, right? That's something, too, to think about. Like, yes, we could give it to you, but do we really want the format to be scalpeled, all the fat taken away, so that there really is just we get back to what we had before? I don't know. And then, again, there's the argument that is even modern actually healthy right now? I don't know. It's healthy in terms of some people will say there's a lot of decks I can play. But when you actually start to look at it, there really isn't a lot of decks to play. If you're gonna like, if you're going to a pro tour, like if you're Daniel Fournier, you're like, and you know, I had a great conversation with him. And he's just, I'm like, what do you think? He's like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I'm gonna pick a deck. I'm gonna be really good at it. I'm gonna know all the intricacies, and that's just what's gonna happen. So, it's funny. Like, maybe there isn't as many edges as we think there is to be ruined, and it's more like Legacy. By the way, Legacy. We get to see Legacy played on the Pro Tour stage. That's good. That is.
Whew, yeah, until exciting. The price of duels doubles again.
Wow.
Like, I mean, Underground C is already $500. Nobody.
Week before the announcement.
It's going to go. It's going to kill Legacy. It's going to kill Legacy for the average player who is even considering getting in. Tabernacle of Pendril Veil is 12. It's no, it's not. I don't believe that Legacy is dead at all. For example,
terms of the average player game,
my roommate Andrew spent a lot of time and effort and a lot of his collection getting a Tabernacle. That's a $1,200 Magic card. Oof. Now, what he did that for is so that now he has the most expensive piece of one of the best decks in Legacy. This is very exciting to him because he now has a deck that he's in. He's into Legacy. He will be able to play forever until all of the Legacy pieces evaporate or all the Legacy players die. So where that's exciting for him is now he's made that leap, but the part that's scary to everyone else is that's just one card in his deck, and he only needs one. But if you need to spend $4,000 to get Underground Seas, that deck is dead. That you will only be playing with people who already have it, and it will become elitist. And no one, it's such a turnoff already. I know people that are like, yeah, I'd love to play Legacy, but I can realistically only play Burn, and they already think that in the next 5 years it's going to take them to save up for the Underground Seas and the Tropical Islands or Volcanic Islands, that they're going to go up. So it's like your investment on dual lands is harder to pay off than a mortgage. You're like, okay, I'll save up $500 this year to get my Underground Sea, but by the time I save up $500, it'll be $600.
So then are you saying
now
that
putting it on the big stage, like, there's going to be speculators who have have $100,000 just lying around to spend on dual lands to make them disappear. We've already seen it happen with a bunch of cards already. We've watched the prices of 93, 94 stuff go up. I mean, even collector's edition cards because of Old School have started to go up again. So there's because of the reserve list, there's no way to alleviate this pressure at all. And people know it. It's a fact. So the speculators that have the capital to buy into it will just dominate the market. And that makes every other player on the ground completely inaccessible to the format.
Well, I'll tell you this. Two, 3 years ago, I was looking at getting into Legacy and it was unaffordable lands. So, like,
Maddie, 2 years ago, I have a picture on my Facebook of a Lotus that came into the store for $2,400. I was like, hey, look, we have a Lotus. It's $2,400. It's like $7,000.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, look. Let me give the other perspective because you see it a lot more than I do. But for the average person I talk to, either you're into Legacy or you're not. And the gap is growing, yes, but it's already so wide. I think most people on the floor are just like, whatever. If SCG is going to, like, pre-buy out, I don't know how they have a crystal ball that's so clear. But they basically raised the price before the announcement was made. So they obviously knew something. I'm sure Channel Fireball knew but couldn't act on it. But you got to ask yourself one question, which is, okay, they're going to showcase, it's not even like a full Legacy GP. It's one third of a Trios event. So it's not even that huge, but is that going to cause metagame pressure? Is it going to cause financial pressure? And then if it does, we're not seeing it for another 5 years, right? Like, this is a one-time thing. Because if they kept doing it, that gap is going to grow exponentially faster. And then do you have a Pro Tour sometime in the near future where everyone who's playing with Legacy cards borrowed them? Like,
yeah,
how messed up is that?
Yeah, like you can't.
But so then the solution is what? Like, I feel like Wizards is trying to showcase like a vintage car race, right? It's like Formula One, but they're like saying, hey, let's go pull out all the $1 million cars out of the... Well, that's funny because the F1 car is $2 million. But anyways, the point is like, let's pull out some historical cars no one can play with. Well, how do I race one? Well, you don't. So like, I understand that this is a... this feels like a 25th anniversary thing to me, and not all the time. But it's still going to do somewhat damage, right?
Like, oh, the impact will last forever. The impact,
yeah. Well, because it can't go down.
Exactly. The impact that this will have on the finances of Legacy will be irreversible forever.
The only thing Wizards can do, and I fully believe that, you know, look, it's the 25th anniversary, maybe by the 30th, we're going to get to a point where they just are going to be looking at, in R&D, a dual land that is better than an original dual land. I know that it's going to be sitting there and they're going to be like, we should print this, put it in standard, and just break it. Because at some point, you're going to have
but
to
say... But it's not like, just the dual lands, though. That's the problem.
But the dual lands... Okay, but look.
Dual lands are a start. Don't get me wrong. Dual lands are 10 of the however many hundreds of cards are on the reserve list, but that's not the only problem. Like, there are other issues others. Like Moat, Abyss, Tabernacle, like sure. Chains. Like, all these cards are like $500. Like, even the quote-unquote legacy unplayables because of old school are insane. They're not collector's items anymore because people want to play with them. Like, when I got my Juzum Djinn, I got it for $400. It's now $800, and I only got it a year ago.
I mean, I can't even fathom when I start to hear stuff like that. But I'm sure, you know what, if they did reprint dual lands, every other card that isn't a dual land quadruples overnight. But, I mean, how do you... You can't... When you listen to the MTG Finance crowd, they're emotionless when they talk about this, and it's just, this is what it is. So the only way that you'll ever get it cheaper is get in now. I know it sounds crazy, but if you want to play Legacy, just you got to suck up, and I don't advise as a financial advisor you doing that, but like, because in 5 years it will be double. No matter what Wizards does, wherever they make one card cheaper, it's going to get more expensive. The only thing that could ever fix Legacy is if Wizards slowly power creep Standard, or cards they release, maybe with a new format or a new design box that prints new cards, like Leovold, and it changes the metagame of Legacy to the point where you don't play those old cards anymore. That's the only thing they can do. And I feel like they're hesitant to really do that too much, because that puts huge dents in people's collections. But Leovold's interesting. Like, if they keep doing things like that, here's a couple cards every year, eventually maybe we get somewhere. I don't know.
I don't think that's fast enough, right? A couple cards every year is not going to do it because... And
Iconic quick, Masters, well, man. Well, who knows?
Quick tangent on why I'm excited about one-block sets is because I feel like moving to a one-block set and everything being a big block means they never have to cut lands from every set.
Exactly.
So... Yep. That's the problem with Legacy, is that it doesn't matter how many good cards you have. If I have Shocks and you have dual lands, you will win.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's someone make a basic land set. I don't know. Oh, by the way, let's talk about a few awesome things, because we've dwelled on that too long. We're excited for Modern. I know I'm going to watch it. I'm a filthy serious casual, so.
Oh, wow, you've upgraded.
Oh, dude, I'm a filthy serious now, but I'm just going to watch that. It's back, baby. I'm so excited.
I can't wait. I'm going to watch. I usually watch all of the Pro Tours, but I will be taking that weekend off to not miss a single second of live coverage. Yeah.
There we go. But let's
have to draft it again, Maddie.
Oh, dude, we're going to have to draft. That's going to be the funnest thing ever.
Yeah, we'll call up Woozles and...
Yeah, Woozles, man. We'll get the Down Unders into this. So let's talk a bit about some other weird announcements that came out. The Unset Unstable, it's going to have full art lands. That's the only announcement out of that whole set I'm excited about.
I mean, and in other news, Water is Wet.
Yeah, but we didn't know. Personally, I was a little bit on the fence that, hey, we've seen full art lands come back in all other sets now. It seems to be like this thing they're going to do every time. So I was like, what are they going to do? Like, what
they're
going to
do? Either one of two things. Either they're going to add all of the Invocation Masterpiece Expedition frames together.
No.
And just have the most ridiculous thing of all time. Actually, Proxy, can I mock one of those up real quick? Let me see how insane it's going to be. Yeah, or there's going to be no border. Yes. And it's going to go full art to the edge.
Yes. So the rumor
I've Or they'll heard, all be and... oversized land, so you can't even play with them.
Oh, that would just be the worst.
It'll be, here's what it is. It'll be a double oversized land that you have to cut into two pieces.
Actually, how amazing. This is my prediction. I don't know any of this. This is, I'm just off the cuffing this one. So, you know, I'm wrong. But I think what we're going to get is fuller borderless lands, and they're all going to be panoramic.
Sure, so that makes sense.
So as you play them on the table, you can just put them right next to each other. That idea alone, I know Mike Linneman's like, oh my God.
Well,
this is awesome.
The other thing they could do is have five different ones. So
yeah,
like
exactly.
Five different planes.
Yes.
And collect them all, right? And then that alone would sell product.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. If these are really cool and the foiling looks nice, these are going to be expensive. These are going to be like $30.
They're going to be quadruple rainbows, both sides.
Oh, no. Please don't do the dub. Please. With the foiling process, can someone please just have one foil? Like, oh.
How about this, Maddie? They'll be double-faced lands.
Double-sided.
So there'll be one picture. There'll be one picture on one side and another picture on the other side. So each land will actually be two lands.
Actually, that is amazing. I love that idea. That is really cool. Dude, sold.
All right.
Anyways.
Hire me. Actually, don't.
Yeah. There's a bunch of garbage. Garbage, whatever. It's going to be fun. There's some people going around saying, you know, unsets. I think it's Magic Man Sam. He's like, oh, unsets cheap in Magic. And it's funny because, like, I look back at, like, the 80s and, like, the stuff we had and... to me, that's kind of like what the unsets are. That's just like, it's a lot of it's politically incorrect now. You look back and you're like, you can't do any of that anymore.
Yeah, smart ass, dumb ass. Well, to be fair, the set symbol does look like a boner with a nut for a nut.
I mean, I get it. It's just where we are politically and socially as a species. I don't know. Like, can you do things like this anymore and have them actually be funny? Because everyone is offended by everything.
That's probably more accurate.
So is it just going to be this softball attempt at wackiness?
No pun intended.
Right. But no, but it's going to fail. Like, that's my thing. Like, either it's like you open a card and you're like, oh my God, or you're like, whatever. So who knows, right?
Yeah, we're not going to get cards that are called dumbass. Like,
No, we're not. We're not going to get anything that like is what you thought the old set would be. My guess is it's going to be just very wacky. Things will be wacky.
It'll be a PC remake of everything. So instead of little girl, exactly. It'll be little person.
Yep. And I mean, hey, that's cool. It actually sounds interesting. I hate that it's all going to be silver bordered. I thought they'd throw some black border stuff in there, but whatever.
Well, the lands.
Well, the lands. Well, no border.
Yeah,
they don't even have a border, so whatever.
Maybe the lands will all just be blank silver sheets, and you just write your own name, like write planes on it. Boom, got there.
Could you imagine the proxy guy like, yeah, they're pre-blank foil. He's like, oh my God,
yeah.
Can I just get a box of those?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I mean that's kind of like where Magic is right now. I think we got the Pro Tour coming up. I'm excited. I love our Devastation. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff on it in the set. I finally got my Green Brothers of Destruction. Tireless Trackers and Snake, Crucible Snake. I'm brewing something there. There's some power there. Modern Frontier, I don't know, but
yo, on the topic of Green Machine, shout out to the guy's name I can't remember who came up and introduced himself to me at the GP at the booth and says he has Green Machine built because of our episode of Heavy Meta.
Oh. So. Dude, Green Machine is still fun. It is a you know what it is? It's a serious casual entry level deck.
Hey, you know what I realized?
That's a great
actually?
Deck to take. Smash.
The card Rattle Chains gives all your spirits flash, and Strangleroot is a spirit.
Oh, it does. That's interesting. There's definitely a few other things I've been looking at. Remember when we tried to build the spirit deck? That's why I tried to get Strangleroot in that one. But I don't know. Spirits is a weird tribe. I think it's got potential, but it's fragile.
Well, it's interesting when you get the hexproof spirits, and now you can actually flash those in. So we're getting closer to being like what's blue green white bant spirits with just splashing collected company and some reasonable spells.
Yeah.
So
and remember, Ixalan is a tribal set.
Yep.
So who knows?
Tribal
man.
Dinosaurs, buddy.
Oh, tribal dinosaur. I mean, it's just so wacky. It's funny. I was talking to a few people about it, and some people were like, Wizards has finally jumped the shark. They're just making weird stuff. And I'm like, is that the reaction you're getting? Because Cadillacs and dinosaurs sound pretty freaking epic to me. Like, I like this idea. I'm like, let's do something really different. I am tired of the Gatewatch showing up and destroying a plane or having it destroyed. Like, enough. Let's go do some wacky stuff.
Yeah, believe it or not, you're still allowed to play Magic exclusively to have fun.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're allowed to design it exclusively to have fun. And it doesn't have to be an unset.
Yeah, exactly, right? Let's get back to that good ground where, like you said earlier, I'm excited for single blocks. I think this is one of the best changes I could ever do. It's just every new set's a new world, hopefully, or whatever.
Or the world's so awesome that it's twice the size now half the time. Like that's quadruple good.
Yeah, it is. And they can change it up. Like there's nothing that's like making them, oh, we have to continue this or that. They have total freedom now to just, if something isn't working, cut it. Go to the next thing. I love this. Super excited for that. Also, I believe, this is all rumor, but I believe we are getting Pirate Jace.
What?
Yeah, Pirate Jace in the... Okay, I know not a lot of people know this. I didn't even know this.
This is definitely not in the show notes.
It's not, because I ghost in the shell, the hacked in, a deep dive down, talking to the spider tanks. The new Planeswalker in Ixalan is going to be a Jace pirate. He's also going to be legendary. For some reason, they're going to change the typeface. It's going to be legendary Planeswalker Jace. And his last ability is going to clone himself. I know. Boom.
Yeah, but that still doesn't work.
Part of the clause, there's going to be some wacky stuff going on with Ixalan.
It's actually interesting if they move to Planeswalkers being legendary and that being a part of the game, because now you'll be able to have a JVP and a JTMS and play at the same time. Right?
I don't know if I like that.
Oh my god, I just blew my mind. I can actually play blue-green Nissa and green-green Nissa.
That I really like.
Because I want those in the same deck, but if I play 8 3-mana Nissas in my deck, I'm a fool right now.
I mean, I'm not sure what they're going to do, or maybe what they're going to do is say certain Planeswalkers, we're going to put legendary on it because we're going to test it slowly. If they errata the whole rules thing and they're just like, hey man, Planeswalkers are legendary from now on. Wow. Now, what's very interesting,
look for your legendary tutor cards.
Right? Right? Also, the legendary hate cards. Go check those out. But the other thing that's really interesting is if you look at what they did and they kept forcing the Gatewatch down our throat because that was their philosophy. You like the Gatewatch? Here's more Gatewatch and more Gatewatch. I think what they did is now people are like, I have 7 misses. I can't play them all. And so what would they do? Oh, fuck. Rot it. Let everyone have whatever they want. So... could be very interesting. It's all theory at this point.
I actually heard this about a month ago from James Chilcott, MGG critic. He told me that they were getting the legendary subtype, and both of our eyes kind of like lit up, and we're like, oh, the brewing possibilities. If you don't follow at MGG critic with his finance stuff, he is amazing on Twitter for his speculations without being one of those people that breaks the specs. Like he got in on Masterpiece Soul Rings and Mana Vaults a long time ago, and he's been happy to cash out every single time. He skipped the North American Frontier Championship, but came over to check in on my deck. One, because he hasn't been on Frontier as much as he can lately, but two, because he's like, well, in the first 40 minutes of being here, I made $1,000 buying and selling masterpieces. So
I mean, he's interesting. He likes to gloat a lot about what he gets. So if you can't take someone doing well at something, don't follow his Twitter. But he's interesting to follow for sure.
He's got some great brews too. He's into Frontier like I am. So if you ever have a brew that's Jeskai Dragons, spit it at him, and I'm sure he'll come to Toronto and crush face.
No, he's got a lot of interesting stuff. He definitely is an interesting guy to follow. But yeah, I mean, Ixalan is. I mean, I haven't like gone super deep on all the speculation or the leaks or whatever was going on, but I was diving deep and I saw Pirate Jace. I'm like, what? How is there? What is going on? I just had to. That just caught my eye. I'm like, I gotta go. And he's all dressed really weird. So I think they finally have Jace not wearing a hoodie. So he's gonna break through his emo side. He's gonna show off some skin.
He'll trade in his hoodie for an eye patch.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to have an eye patch, but he's definitely going to have like a one-arm freak kind of thing.
Interesting.
But yeah, interesting stuff coming up. The whole legendary Planeswalker thing opens up, I believe, so much brewing space. Like even in Frontier alone, it opens up. But Modern? Wow. And all those 3-mana Planeswalkers, like you could have Gideon.deck, and it would be probably pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, you can't beat stubborndenial.deck, but yeah, it's a nice try.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm competitive. I'm just saying, like, hey, interesting ideas.
Hey, for a serious casual, this is serious business.
You can be as filthy as you want in your corner, but it's serious business over here.
Hey, just pick up a bar of soap.
Yeah,
you'll turn yourself from a filthy casual to a serious casual.
As long as you're casual at some point, I don't care what you're doing. That's what it comes down to, man.
Oh, man.
All right, well, let's end this show. Let's talk a little bit about some benefits, because we had our episode on fitness completely destroyed by the internet, so let's see if the internet hates this, too.
Yeah, I blame Hal Johnson and Joanne McLeod.
Oh, I blame those guys, man, those body break bastards. So let's talk about change, because I know, you know, it was great meeting all these people. I got to meet Lambert, and I got to see Ken. I got to see all these guys like on our Keto Masters.
Frankie.
Frankie, man. Really great to see all these people doing really well. And I think the thing that keeps coming up is change and how powerful it is and how, you know, maybe we don't be scared of change so much.
Actually,
people.
The biggest person that we had, the least biggest person that we didn't, that we didn't shout out for, crushing the keto diet is Kelly. It was his birthday yesterday.
Oh man.
Yeah. And I see Kelly every day. And I've even noticed a change in his body. His face is slimmer, his neck's slimmer. Yep. I see him standing there trying to pull his pants up, he's full on in ketosis and has been for a long time. Like, he's down to, you know, one meal a day, which is mono intermittent fasting. He still works like a dog, and he's got tons of energy. Like, he had tons of energy before. And I thought it came from Satan, but now it comes from coconut oil. Like, there's proof coconut oil, avocado, and salmon, and that guy's just killing it. And I actually had a really interesting conversation when him and I went out for like a 10K walk last week before the GP. He said a year ago for his birthday, his wife bought him a personal trainer at like a boot camp, and they've been doing it for a year straight. And now that it's been 12 months of doing it and committing to the routine and the exercise and the workout, he said that's good and he feels good and like that's made a difference. Clearly it's improved stamina, it's improved like muscle mass, things like that. But it didn't give him the physical body change in 12 months that keto did in 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Not even 12 weeks, 4 weeks. He said a month after keto, my pants didn't fit anymore. I felt better. My face was slimmer and my neck was slimmer. And that combined with his exercise regimen, like, this kid is fit now. And he's older than me by 6 weeks. So now he's an old man. And for the next 6 weeks, I get to call him an old man. But it's amazing to see, to hear firsthand of the difference that the change in diet makes. So yeah, exercise is great. And maybe you hear it when you look into some diets that, yeah, exercise is a large part of it and having a healthy lifestyle, but your diet is the most important thing that you can manage. The most important thing that you can manage. And it makes you think better. It makes you sleep better. It makes you love better in all ways. It makes you just makes you the best person that you can be. And the decisions at the start are hard because sugar is a drug.
It's changed.
It's addictive. You are force fed it. It's put in everything that you do every day. It's almost unavoidable. But if you can commit to a lifestyle change of cutting sugar first, you will not believe the results you have in such a short period of time.
Yeah, 100%. I think part of it too is in life and everything, even like magic, a lot of things, change is good, you know? I call it the fire. So if you're ready to step into the fire and it looks hot there and it looks like it's going to hurt a bit, it might be a good thing, you know? You end up burning off a lot of the stuff you don't need, and you come through it much better than you were before. It's always scary because change is scary. But learning is part of that process. And I feel like just change in general is really good for most people, especially if you're unhappy. If you're unhappy where you are, change it up. Deck choices included, right? If you don't like playing your deck or your format, change. You know, it doesn't mean quit. It means change. If you don't like where you are in life, change. But yeah, just a little thing I wanted to talk about, it because it was just really neat to see all these people that I'm like, wow, look how change is like really making a huge difference for everyone. And it was mostly all positive. Actually, it was 100% all positive. Which was awesome. So,
Matty, you being in my life over the last few years has changed my life. You know, it's, and not just like the actual things, like, you helped me got rollerblades within 2 weeks, you know, you got me a bike, you set me up with Vegas, you took care of my platinum package, like, all these things that, like, are simple and
that's easy.
And are just, exactly, those are easy, but I just want to tell you here on the record, man, I love you and I appreciate you so much for the inspiration that you give me on a daily basis, and I know people know that we podcast, but you and I talk, like, every single day. And that's something that I look forward to every day. And I'm not trying to impress you in any way, but it's really nice to have, it's really nice to have someone in your life who cares about you. And for all you people listening, like, we care. Twitter us, DM us, Facebook us. We care about all you people. We love meeting you in person. I know Lambert messaged me and talked about, taking the keto plunge. And the first thing I said to him is, come into the store, man. Let's talk in person. You know,
what I told him.
Let's make some time to sit down and chat and I'll show you. I'll show you who I am and how I feel and what I can offer you. And if you're ready, I'm here for you. And if you're not ready, I'll be waiting.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? I think one thing that I realized is I'm a stubborn person. I try a lot of stuff first on my own. And, man, it takes a long time. I make a lot of mistakes. But once I get through that, I really love it when people, like, ask me questions, like, how did you do this? I'm like, I will sit down and stop what I'm doing and I'll tell you, you know, like, if I can help at all, I will. Like, that's part of what I believe being on this planet is all about, right? You know, sharing, growing knowledge in that is great. Everything else is gravy, man. You know, giving someone some blades is not hard, but giving them a chance to change is rare, right? You don't come across it a lot. So I think, like, in life, the pay it forward attitude is, like, really good. Like, pay it forward, keep it changing, man. Actually, keep it changing. That's a good logo. Oh, by the way, shirts. So yes, I did come up with that awesome serious casual design. It's pretty awesome. I like it.
I like it.
Yeah, we like it. Everyone said it's great. How do I order one? Where do I throw my money?
Now that the GP's over, Maddie, we can probably put some brain power into this.
Well,
and by we, I mean me.
Yeah. So here's the thing that, like, we have to think about. The first run of shirts we did were premium quality, no exception, and we learned a lot.
Wow, did we learn a lot?
Yeah. We have to find a slightly different way to do this this time. I think maybe just going to a single color shirt. So, like, we'll pick a gray or a black, and then maybe we can do two color inks, but only single sided. So we're going to look into that and see, like, what's the cost on that. But yeah, if you're interested, let us know. Really what it comes down to is, like, gauging demand. Like, if I hear, like, there's 100 people this time that want a shirt, I'm going to choose a different direction than if, like, 50 people want a shirt. So if you do like it, please let us know. Try to hit us up, you know, like, on Twitter, DMs, leave us comments. It's just great to know. Sometimes you're making content, you put it out in the world and you're like, did anyone listen to this? You know? And then you're a GP and people are like, oh my God, I listen every week. I'm like, well, you never tell me that. You know, like, tweet at me or something. Tell me, like, so I understand, like, that this isn't just going into the ether, you know? Like, come on, people. But yeah, we're going to make some awesome merch. My plan is to do the serious casual run next. We're gonna get some details. I would like to do maybe, like, shirts and hoodies. Ooh.
So without getting in too much, I have a line on a guy for shirts. I don't know about hoodies.
What?
So okay. That's something that I've been putting a little bit of energy into, and definitely Ooh. Like a black shirt with purple or red font. Obviously, those are our colors.
Purple or blue. I want to do a different color this time. People said they want purple because purple's awesome.
Well, purple is obviously the best, not close.
But I want to do a blue.
All right, cool. The blue logo you showed me is really nice. Either way, I have a line on some really good quality black shirts that we can do at a much more affordable price. So,
sweet.
Hoodies, that's going to be Maddie's magic. So we'll see.
I know where to get them. I know how to do it. It's just going to come down to volume. And again, it's the same time everything, right? Like, if we were... The way, like, you see some of these, like, YouTuber guys that, like, offer merchandise, because they just buy 1,000. Like, if we bought 1,000 out of our own pocket, yeah, we could make things different. But once you get into that level, like, merchandising is like
if somebody has $12,000 I can borrow, I have the space to store them,
yeah,
and I'm exactly I'm happy right. to sell them for $20 shipped.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, done.
Just somebody front me the $12,000, and I'll do the work. I'll do the storing. I'll do the shipping. No problem. They'll just show up at your door.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe we'll sell our dual lands.
Yeah, so well, only one, though. You only have to sell one.
Yeah, Well, I'll place that. Well, by the in the next 3 years, a place that an undergrad C is going to be there.
Maddie, you know, nobody's waiting 3 years for a shirt.
No, I know. You know what? They might. I bet there's some old school heavy metal people that are like, I'll still wait.
That's probably true. There's probably some people still waiting.
Yeah, there is some people that are still waiting.
There's definitely people standing on my porch right now looking to get into the club.
As long as they're not smashing golf balls off, I don't care what they're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, people. Well, hype out as always. Keep changing.
Hype out. Change is good.
Hype out. Change is good, man. Make it happen.